हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So, 62, 63. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. From anger, complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. Only a devotee can control the senses. One who is not Krishna conscious is subjected to material desires while contemplating the objects of the senses. The senses require real engagements. If they are not engaged in the transcendent loving service of the Lord, they will certainly seek engagement in the service of materialism. One who is not, therefore, in Krishna consciousness, however powerful he may be in controlling the senses by artificial repression, is sure ultimately to fail, for the slightest thought of sense pleasure will agitate him to gratify his desires. So, only in Krishna consciousness can the senses actually be engaged and they not be entangling. So it's not a matter of if they're just a little engaged or a lot engaged, it's a matter of if they're engaged, they're entangling, right? But if they're engaged a little bit, they entangle a little bit. Engaged a lot, they entangle a lot. So the idea is that the devotee is able to contemplate objects of the senses because the objects of the senses aren't for his senses. Right? So then it's very easy. You know, it's just like, let's say you want to buy something for yourself. It can be quite confusing. You know, because it could be this, it could be that. But if you're thinking about someone else, you know what they like, what they're looking for and all that, then it's very easy. You go in there and, okay, this matches, that doesn't. Because you're not looking at it from the perspective of what you can get from it. Right? Does that make sense? So it makes it very easy. So the point is contemplating the object of the senses, it's not technically, we would call it objects of the senses, because it's not the object of your sense. It's object for Krishna. So therefore we're saying contemplating what would be the best way to serve Krishna. So we wouldn't call it contemplating the objects of the senses. But technically that's what you're doing. Right, you're looking at a situation, well, how can we make nice flower arrangements or nice decorations or other things like that for Krishna? So it's not technically contemplating the objects, because it's not the object for you. Does that make sense? Like before. So we don't call it sense gratification. Right? Because if it's for Krishna, it's not sense gratification.
Is it a nature of some person that they like speculate or contemplate more than the others?
Yeah.
For them is nothing like certain. They never sure of what it is.
Yeah. No, it means contemplation means people, everyone has their nature, so people have different things. People like to think about things more and this and that. The point is that does it come to a conclusion or not? That's the important element. Because as we were saying before, is what was it? The word Muni means one who can agitate his mind in various ways for mental speculation without coming to a factual conclusion. So there is a taste in that, and so some people will do that. this, they don't like, you know, whether it's intellectual or whether it's emotional. It's just a matter of absorbing yourself that way. So, you know, it just disturbs the mind and creates some kind of situation for yourself that you somehow or another find, how you say? You'd say, I mean, comfortable would be the wrong word, because it might be that it makes you comfortable, it might make it you uncomfortable, but you actually like making yourself comfortable or uncomfortable.
It's a kind of sense gratification.
Yeah, it is. It is. So it means it's there. It just, it, much of the time, if it doesn't come to a conclusion, yeah. If it's intellectually, it means then they like to, you know, then the whole, their focus is for, they just want to speculate more and more, because the taste of that. Or it maybe it doesn't come to an emotional conclusion. You know, so it just, it means your taste would be that it wouldn't be intellectual, you just look at it from various ways of emotional. You know, they said this, or did they mean this, but they could mean that, and if it means that, then it means this, and that, and then so many problems will be that way, and then this will happen, and then you lose everything here, but then what if they meant this, and there's always, you know, you can just go on and on. So it's the same thing, but you're just, is the conclusion that's being avoided emotional, is the conclusion being avoided is intellectual? Because in either one of them, then you have to do something afterwards. Because generally, if we get one is doing this, then one doesn't do anything, right? Because the person who's intellectually doing, then he's not going to perform any activity because he's speculating, he's happy that way. The other one who's doing the same thing but emotionally, then they're not going to act because the emotions are still moving. So until it settles, you can't make, therefore, a direction and then do something. So in either way, then we see that you have the element that they're not being engaged. But it appears, you know, within the field, it appears, seemingly appears glorious, because the person is very intellectual, or they're very emotional, or, does that make sense? So it's just, but the point to note is the conclusion. You know, just like if you're doing something, it's not what you're doing, it's what's the conclusion of that. Who's the result for? Right? Then it makes it, it's devotional, or it's spiritual, or it's pious, or it's impious, like that. So the same way is that in here, the result or the goal of contemplation is conclusion.
Yeah.
Because if there's conclusion, then there's action.
Right.
Right? So in both these, there's no conclusion. So that's where the problem is. That's why you don't have to look at what they're contemplating or why they're contemplating. It's what's the result. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know? So it's just, that's the nice thing. It means you go in from there, and then from there you can expand it, whatever is, you know, the weaknesses or anything else. But that there's no conclusion come to, that's the problem. Because if there's one thing, work on that. And if it's not that, then you pick together. You know, that's the thing. Intellectually, you look at it. Okay, it looks like it's like this. So therefore, now act. And then if you find it's not like that, then you make adjustments. You know, same emotion. If you think it's like this, then you act in that way. And then if you find it's not, make adjustments.
Sometimes these people, devotees, they complain that if you give them conclusion, then it's, you know, it's no fun. It's boring, or you know, it's straightforward. And then, where's the fun?
Yeah,
so they just, they don't really like it.
No, so you don't get involved.
Uh-huh.
That's the best thing. You know, when they're doing that, then you always have something else to do. Uh-huh. Right. You know. That's the thing. You can always chant your japa and watch the fun when they go back. You know, in other words, you do something else, don't get involved, because it means if you try and you see that that's actually a thing, in other words, they just want to intellectually taste the intellectual contemplation or taste the emotional contemplation. So if that's it, then they're doing what they want to do. Because one will look at it, or they're contemplating to come to a conclusion to figure out what they want to do. But if when you give conclusion, that's not appreciated, it means they're already doing what they want to do. You know what I'm saying? So now it's just a matter of if you want to take part in that or not. So it's not so important, then do something else. Like that. So that's there. Because then if it's intellectual, means the intellectualizing stops. If it's emotional, means then the emotion, the whole experience, the intensity stops. So the intensity of either the intellectual engagement or the emotional engagement stops. Because then you have to act. As soon as you act, then it kind of diffuses things, since you have to put together the intelligence, the senses, the situation. So it doesn't have the same, necessarily, absorption. You know, it can, but it doesn't necessarily. So that's why then, especially if the neither of them like it. Academics really hate it when you throw out a conclusion. I mean, they just really hate it. They just really hate it. Yeah. So you just don't. You know. And but then you can understand. It's okay. That's where they're. So don't worry about dealing on that. But if you're in a class, do what you like. If it's personally talking with them, avoid it. But in a class, say what you like, you know, what can you do? If they don't like it, then they can ask a question. If they dare. Like that. But then that means they'll hear another conclusion, so better to keep your mouth shut, because then there's less conclusions. But. Yes?
Could you say that such speculation and with no conclusions, an activity pretty much in the mode of ignorance?
Oh, well, it means you have, ultimately, there is the element of ignorance, because without conclusion or without connecting to the Lord, then it doesn't have any substance. But it's not necessarily that's what you're working with. You know what I'm saying? Because the intellectual, technically, intelligence is working with goodness, you know, or the emotions, you're working with passion, you know, like that. But it also can be, you have to just see what's, and in that, what is their conclusion? You know, in not concluding, what's their purpose? You know, is it just that, like the academic stuff, get something intellectual and just keep going on and speculate? It makes them more and more inspired, so they get more enthusiastic and all that. So then, that will be, they're dealing with that aspect of the emotions that maybe it gets intense or this or that. As long as there's a continuance. But if by absorbing yourself like that, it ends up as a destructive kind of element, then that you could say that would be ignorance. The others would be these other, but it's not ultimately, even if it's they're using goodness, but their conclusion is not, because it's for their own purpose, so therefore it comes back into passion. You know what I'm saying?
The mind is in goodness.
The mind's a goodness, yeah.
Okay. So the intelligence works with the goodness of the mind. Is that
true? Yeah, well, no, see, it's just, it's made from goodness, but it doesn't mean that you're using it for goodness. Oh. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So it's just what something's made from, but it doesn't mean that that's what you use it for. You know, like a Shamataka jewel is there, you know, so that's, you know, has value, but the kid's just playing with it like, you know, anything. It could be a rock, you know. You know what I'm saying? So it's all these things give an indication so you know how they function, you know, and how to deal with it. So let's say, you know, like you're saying there, the mind is goodness, is produced from goodness, right? So then that means then the element of dealing in the present, what's present, is important. Okay? So, and yeah, and so that would mean generally there's knowledge, there is regularity, all these different things. So that is looking at the positive things. But then let's say the same position, then the feminine nature is the mind, right? So it is therefore obsessing about some particular, you know, emotional element. So that's being happening in the present. So it doesn't matter what the past was. You know, 2 seconds ago they were in ecstasy and now they're completely annoyed. It doesn't matter what the past was. It doesn't matter what you say, what can happen in the future. It's all about what's happening right now. You understand? But if you don't deal with the present, because you have to deal with the present in knowledge, then they're going to say something connected with knowledge.
No.
No, they're going to say, you don't understand. But it's not a matter of intelligence, it's a matter of emotion. You know what I'm saying? But it means you're not seeing the field. Right? Because in the man, he'll use intelligence. That's his central position. But intelligence means engagement and getting a result. But here, the present is not about getting a result, it's about the experience. Passion is you do something and get a result. So therefore, it doesn't match. So he's trying to say, well, this and that, to get a result. But that's not the point. It's not the woman is not about getting a result, it's about the experience that's now and its natural transformations. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, it means you have all these qualities that you know come from intelligence, you know, or from mind and passion and goodness. But it's a matter of how they're manifest in that particular situation. You know what I'm saying? So if you understand how they function. You know? Does that make sense? It doesn't mean you know what to do. It just means you know how they're working. Okay, so then, footnote 65. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 4.22.14, in this material world, the auspicious and inauspicious are simply mental concoctions, because such things exist only due to association with the material world. Right? We say that something's auspicious, something's not auspicious, but it's actually only because you're in the material world you consider this thing auspicious or inauspicious. So actually, therefore, it's a mental concoction. It's dead matter. So it doesn't really, you know, it's like, you know, is this rock auspicious or inauspicious? You know? So like that. So it's just mental concoction. Oh, it's very auspicious. Oh, no, it's inauspicious. You know, like that. You know,
is that the same thing Prabhupada says, this world is product of your mental speculation?
Yeah, the world is a product of mental speculation because you've contemplated how you'll enjoy. So therefore you have desires, you make your endeavor and move in that direction. So then the modes then will then create the whole, unfold the whole situation. So it appears that, no, I'm doing so many things, but it's all just the mental. Yeah. Because if you thought differently, the situation you'd be in would be different. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like somebody thinks in one way, they will, you know, go to certain places in a city. Someone thinks in another way, they'll go to different places in the city. They both are thinking, I'm in the same, they're in that city. But the manifestation is totally different. Is that? This is called illusion, or Atma Maya. We think ourselves created by material nature exactly as we think ourselves experiencing so many things in a dream. In the dream we think it's real. So then we identify with it. We have the experiences. It's not real, but we have the experiences. The spirit soul, however, is always transcendental. There's no question of becoming materially covered. This covering is simply something like a hallucination or a dream. It means that they're not actually covered. It means every living entity is pure, but they, in their illusion, think that they're covered. And is therefore... Does that make sense? So we can see is that element is then very close. It means the impersonal concept is, you know, or the Mayavadi concept, it's all illusion. What's illusion is how you perceive it, not what you're perceiving. What you're perceiving is there. What you perceive of it, that's where the illusion is. Right? But they'll say it's just all illusion, there's nothing there at all. You know? Does that make sense? But if they were really true to their philosophy, it would all be Brahman. So it's your illusion, what you think it is, but it exists and it's Brahman. But then they'll have problems, so it's just easier to say it just doesn't exist. In Bhagavad Gita 2.62 it is said, Sangat Sanjayate Kama. Simply by association, we create artificial material necessities. They're not necessary. We say, oh, I have to have this, or I have to. The soul doesn't need any of that. You know, we have to have our house, we have to live in Malibu, and you know, no, you don't have to. Does that make sense? No? Yeah, Paris is fine. Why have to go to Malibu? Jayato vishayan pumsas sangash teshu vajayate. When we forget our real constitutional position and wish to enjoy the material resources, our material desires manifest, and we associate with varieties of material enjoyment. We forget the constitutional position, then we wish to enjoy the material resources. Right? Because the resources are there. When we see I'm serving the Krishna, then the resources are, you to contemplate them, connected to Krishna. Right? But if you don't see them in relationship to Krishna, then you contemplate how to enjoy them for yourself. So then therefore the desire will come up, then the attachment, then the, you know, the lust, then the anger, like this. And we associate varieties, okay. As soon as the concoctions of material enjoyment are there, because of our association, we create a sort of lust or eagerness to enjoy them. And when that false enjoyment does not actually make us happy, we create another illusion known as anger. Right? Because now we're very angry about, you know, our dream didn't work out the way we want, and now in the dream we're really upset. And by the manifestation of anger, the illusion becomes stronger. Because then you really identify with it, you really, you narrow it down, and you know, you take steps that maybe you wouldn't otherwise. When we are illusioned in this way, forgetfulness of our relationship with Krishna follows. And by thus losing Krishna consciousness, our real intelligence is defeated. Like the sat chit ananda. So the chit nature of the soul, then that's defeated because we become under illusion. In this way, we become entangled in the material world. In Bhagavad Gita 2.63, it is said, by material association, we lose our spiritual consciousness. Consequently, there is the question of the auspicious and inauspicious. Right, so spiritual consciousness, then it's not auspicious or inauspicious, it's just what pleases Krishna. In the material world, there's auspicious and inauspicious, because auspicious means what's going to be good for us. Right? Because it's good. You do something auspicious means it gives benefit. Right? Material benefit accrued. And who will get the benefit of the material benefit? Right? Ourselves. Right? Either ourselves or our extended identity. You know, it's family, friends, community, nation, you know, humankind, or life, you know, like that. But those who are Atmarama are self-realized have transcended such questions. The Atmaramas or self-realized persons gradually make further progress in spiritual bliss. Of gradually making further progress in spiritual bliss, come to the platform of association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the perfection of life. In the beginning, the Kumaras were self-realized and personless, but gradually they became attracted to the personal pastimes of the Supreme Lord. The conclusion is that for those who are always engaged in the devotional service of the Personality of Godhead, the duality of the auspicious and inauspiciousness does not arrive. Does that make sense? So, in other words, the question of piety or impiety, it's not a matter of that, because the material world is an illusion anyway, that it's pious or impious. So the only value to something is that Shastra says it should be done. So what Shastra says, that's always, you know, auspicious. But for us, it's only auspicious because it's connected to Krishna. Otherwise, even if we follow auspicious things defined by the Vedas, it'll still keep us in illusion. Because we're not seeing that auspicious is meant for Krishna. Inauspicious means the lack of doing things for Krishna. But still, even we're doing auspicious, we're leaving Krishna out of it, so ultimately it's still inauspicious.
Spiritual world, everything is auspicious then?
Yeah, there wouldn't be any question about otherwise. Like, you know, the forest fire is there, but what happens when the forest fire is there? Yeah, it means everybody remembers Krishna. You know, Krishna interacts with the devotees, so there's nothing inauspicious. Because here, inauspicious means there'll be a loss. Right? So that's why the devotee, technically, there's no auspiciousness, because there's no loss. You may, means material facility may not be there, but the point is you can still remember Krishna. You know, so it just makes it that much easier. Yes.
How can one be a self-realized impersonalist?
Self-realized impersonalist. Why? What would you want them to realize? Self means
because they have no individuality.
Yeah, that's there. But they understand the self is Brahman. That's their understanding. So. See, here's the difference. Here is the impersonalist means they don't. There is no illusion. It's just all Brahman. It's an illusion to think that it's not Brahman. Right? But for the Mayavadi, you have this kind of element of duality that there is an illusion that doesn't exist. What you're an illusion about is not there. But for the impersonalist, what you're illusion about is you think it's something for enjoyment or this or that, but actually it's Brahman. I'm saying, so this building exists, but it's Brahman. But for the Mayavadi, they'll say it doesn't exist, there's only Brahman. But this building can't be Brahman. You know, so it's quite selective. And then the people, I'm God, you're God, we're all God. But somehow or another, the forms and everything else is not also part of God, you know? Or they'll use it and then everything's God, so therefore you can enjoy anything you want. So, you know, it doesn't work very good. So here self means they understand that the individual, them as a soul, is part of Brahman. So all there is Brahman. You know what I'm saying? So whether it's, you know, themselves is Brahman, the complete Brahman, but it's just Brahman, so it doesn't matter. You know, it's one rock, there's many rocks, but it's rocks. So it's not a problem if there's one rock, but the point is it's rocks. You know, but the Mayavadis just say there are no individual rocks. There's only rock. You know what I'm saying? But the impersonalist is not a problem that there's rocks. The point is if you think it's, you know, ice cream or something, then you have a problem. Right? Bad for your teeth. Right? Does that make sense? So the impersonalist, what the impersonalists are discussing and what we'll discuss will actually be the same thing. The only problem is they'll stop at Brahman, while for us, that's where it begins. We begin with Brahman. That's like you're situated spiritually. And then you Paramatma Bhagavan. So you're trying to get to the Bhagavan platform. Right? So for us, Brahman is just where we start. You know, just like when we preach. Sarvadharma put it to just where we start from. But in other sampradayas, that's their secret mantra, and you only tell that to somebody when they're old and give up family life and are going to sit down and do bhajan. Then they hear that mantra. Does that make sense? So for us, we just start on Brahman. You know, Brahman is the quad, all-pervading, it's everywhere, everything's connected to the Lord. So universal form is where we start the discussion. You know what I'm saying? So it's not for us, it's not like getting to Brahman. We start from Brahman. We're trying to get to Bhagavan. Because it all is Brahman. So it's not a matter of thinking it's Brahman or not thinking it's Brahman. It is Brahman. It's an illusion that it's not Brahman. You know, it may be little kid Brahman, or it may be, you know, kids throwing Brahman rock through, you know, the lady next door is, you know, window Brahman, you know, like that. But it's all Brahman. You know, so for them it's not a problem. So rock Brahman has gone through window Brahman. So what's the big deal? It's got nothing to do with the soul anyway. It means as far as that, you know, that this window is something important other than its Brahmanness. You know? But because of dealing with Bhagavan, then you can look at the whole culture that goes along with it. You know, they can identify, okay, you identify within it, so you're feeling a problem there, but you just have to give that up and become neutral. But for us, it's no, that window can be engaged in the Lord's service. So that's why you don't want Rock Brahman going through Window Brahman. Because then when Rock Brahman goes through Window Brahman, the window is not very good use in Krishna's service. Right? Does that make sense? Okay.
I'm just thinking about, like, we have, it's probably always been there, a big push for chanting, it's very purifying, but
we have Harinam and Kirtan Nellas.
I'm just thinking that it's talking about devotional service. Yes, chanting is devotional service, but I'm thinking maybe we have to see a real balance in, you know, performing service and chanting.
Yes. See, the point is we're, as long as the conditioning is there, means of the two, it's just absorbing oneself in, you know, the name, form, qualities, pastimes, you know, paraphernalia, associates, dham. That's what we're trying to do. So now, of all the processes to uplift one to that, then the chanting process in the association devotees is the best. But the point is if one's conditioned, that conditioning is what is keeping you, is the distraction that you're not remembering Krishna. So by engaging those distractions according to the do's and don'ts that Shastra gives, then they are connected to Krishna. So instead of taking us away from Krishna, they are purifying and connect us to Krishna. So then we'll be more inclined to be absorbed in the direct process. Right? So occasionally you have something like they have the Kirtan Mela, you have it, you know, there are those who may travel around, they're always in a Kirtan Mela, like the ones that they list on the, you know, who will be singing, they're generally at most of the Kirtan Melas. But most everybody else who comes is that however often the Kirtan Mela comes through, that's how often they're in one. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, what I'm saying is another thing. So that's in conditioning, right? Otherwise you can always walk, right? You know, you know, as long as they're not too close together. Okay, maybe you miss one, but you get the next one. Like that. But then that one's too far away, and by the time you get there, then it'll be, you know, so walk fast, maybe. You know. Get a bicycle. Yeah, that'll speed things up a lot, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a balance. It's not just kirtan, chant.
It means if you can do that, that would be the best. But the point is if one's not doing that, then the balance is all those other aspects, you're seeing how to connect them to the Lord. Right? Otherwise, then it's kirtan, and then you're spiritual, and then you go back to normal life. But there is, as we said here, that the concept of normal life is actually an illusion. So it's when those things are connected. So the idea is as much as you can absorb yourself. In other words, if you could absorb yourself in kirtan, or you could sit at home and do something, you know, not so glorious, then better to do the kirtan. But if it's a matter of you've done as much kirtan as you can do, now you need to do something else because of your conditioning, then do something else, but see that what you're doing is connected to the Lord. Does that make sense? You know, because it's like, you know, the family went to the Kirtan Mela, and then afterwards they come home and talk about how nice it was being at the Kirtan Mela, right? So, I mean, it's connected, but why are they at home?
Hungry?
Yeah, could be hungry.
It's finished.
Like that. What if it's 24 hours? Yeah. So the point is no, but what we're missing here, the subtle thing is they need to be at home. There's an attachment of being at home with the family members. But that's being used properly because now they're discussing about the Kirtan Mela. You understand? But the point is the attachment is still there. So as long as that's there, there's not a problem that they go home. You know what I'm saying? But if they had more and more taste, then they'd all stay out. You know what I'm saying? You know, then it's just your, you know. So it's just a matter of how it's, yeah, you have to have a balance. Like Lord Chaitanya, they would do kirtan. But then at some point they would stop and they would take a shot and you know, rest a little bit and all that and whatever duties they had to take care of. Then they come back together in the evening. Like that, you know. Generally, those kirtans aren't quoted for the kirtan mela. They quote, you know, Nityananda Prabhu's 72-hour kirtans and stuff like that. But generally speaking, Lord Chaitanya, they did kirtan in the morning, stop, you know, like that. Then in the evening again, started. Like that. So he said he'd do 12 hours kirtan, but that was 12 hours in a day, not at a stretch. You know, you don't really hear of Lord Chaitanya doing 12 hours of stretch. Nityananda, yes. He would, you know, 72 was not uncommon. But that's, he's an avatar. Lord Chaitanya would kind of work within the, you know, cultural framework. Now, so even if they did 12 hours a day, but they would do in the morning, and then they'd do in the evening. You know, like that. Oh, yes.
Why they then stop kirtan? Because Krishna Lila, I mean, then.
Okay, so you can only do kirtan in Krishna Lila. There's nothing else to do in Krishna Lila.
Yeah, but maybe.
You have to remember, they're not sadhakas. We're discussing Harinam as the best because we see, we sit down and do kirtan, we're not doing something else. Right? What's the example? Arjuna was sleeping, right? When he went up close to Arjuna, his hair was chanting, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is these devotees are always hearing and chanting about Krishna, but then there'll be the form of doing kirtan, samkirtan, you know, that the kirtan like that. So that's done some of the times, but they're always doing kirtan. There's no question to ever not doing kirtan. Somebody say? Right? Because the point is the kirtan's nice, but also sitting down afterwards and having something to eat is nice, or resting, or sitting and talking, or going for a walk is nice. You know, or playing in the Jamuna is nice. They're all nice, because it's all connected to Krishna. But for us, there's a chance that most everything else except kirtan is not necessarily connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Right? It means you're sitting at your house, so in the morning, you know, you do 20 minutes kirtan or half an hour kirtan with the family and all this, and then you get ready, you know, breakfast, kids go off to school, you go off to work and that. And then the evening, you know, you come together and then there's a little, you know, or artik, somebody does the artik, this and that. Maybe you sit there and read a little bit of something and like that, you know. Does that make sense? Is that too a too archaic presentation here, right? Like that. So, in other words, the point is even though we go, wow, that's so, you know, who does that? But you know, you're talking about maybe an hour here of kirtan in a day, in 24 hours, right? Does that make sense? But if there's a kirtan mela, then we'll go and sit there for, you know, 8 hours or 12 hours or whatever it is. Right? You know, it comes up for, you know, one day or, you know, here 4 days or whatever it is, right? And then we'll go back to our, you know, 1 hour a day. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. Right? So that means these regular principles are important. But they're regular principles of freedom because they free one from the senses just doing whatever they like. So it appears, we'll take it as from the motive, perspective of the mode of ignorance, that it's restriction. But Krishna is calling the regulative principles of freedom. Means they restrict the material and then bring you to the transcendental path, so you're free. You understand? But due to mode of ignorance, we'll think, oh, it's too much. And, yeah.
Some
are conditioned. Some are conditioned. I see.
Some are conditioned in a particular way.
Oh, in a particular... Oh, but only some. Most are conditioned in... general way, but only some are conditioned in very specific ways.
Yeah, so some people are conditioned, like musicians, it's easier for them to sit in the kirtan to engage their conditioning in kirtan. So can we say it's a better conditioning? For some people, it's easier for them to sit through the classes during the day and then...
Depends which ones you're talking about. Are you talking about the ones right in the very center? Or the ones a little bit outside of that? Or where? Which ones are you talking about?
Whatever.
Well, I mean, the guys there, they're showing off their tats and, you know, their muscles and all that kind of stuff and doing all that kind of stuff. So it's because they're a musician there for their better situation?
They sound gross. Huh? No, they sound pretty gross.
Yeah, so the point is any conditioning has its good and bad points. So because the musician, because it's a form of music, therefore they can sit there for the 12 hours. But the point is how much of that they're actually absorbed in the kirtan. Yeah. But the point is because even whatever they're absorbed in, it's of support to the kirtan, they're getting benefit for that. And they're hearing the name, so whether they're hearing it purely or not, they're getting benefit. So you could say, yeah, that would put them there. You know, but that's just a musician. But at the same time as then, if it's not that kind of kirtan, they might not go to another kirtan that someone else who is a little bit farther out in the circle might go to. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because someone else is singing, and so it doesn't matter who's singing, you go to the kirtan, but they'll only go if it's a particular level of, you know, singing or mridanga or the tune or, you know, so it also depends upon the taste, whether it's specific or general. You know, in other words, there's two kinds of taste of the name. One is that if it's done in a particular way, you have a taste. And the other is that if it is, it doesn't matter. It's a holy name, so you're not. It's nice. You know what I'm saying? The point is that if you can focus on the name, it doesn't matter who you are. Because focusing on the name is, you know, the natural quality of the soul. So if someone has good sadhana, they can also sit there. Or at least they like chanting, then they can sit there. Does that make sense? Yeah? So I'm saying everything has its advantage and disadvantage. So if that's an advantage for them so that they can be in the kirtan, great. But then when they're not in the kirtan, you may or may not want to know what goes on. So... You know, so. Like planning your next tattoo, how much that's, you know, that. A devotee is transcendent to all attachment and detachment. It is already explained that one may externally control the senses by some artificial process, but unless the senses are engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is every chance of a fall. Although the person in full Krishna consciousness may apparently be on the sensual plane because of his being Krishna conscious, he has no attachment to sensual activities. Right? In other words, he's engaging, because here it mentions attachment and detachment, because we take it that detachment's automatically spiritual. No, it's just a different form of attachment. Right? But it may be progressive, you know, up to a point. But the difficulty is that Krishna consciousness means the senses are engaged in the Lord's service. So sometimes the attachment to detachment doesn't allow you to engage the senses in the Lord's service. Like sometimes very detached persons can't appreciate prasad. Right? I mean, it's prasad, so they take it, you know, so it's spiritual, but they can't appreciate that it tastes nice or it's well cooked, or because that would be maya. You know, it's not, it's Krishna. It's maya, it's yoga maya, you know, because it's Krishna. Does that make sense? So the idea is that it may appear they're acting on the essential platform, but they have no attachment for it because it's connected to Krishna. Krishna conscious person is concerned only with the satisfaction of Krishna and nothing else. Therefore, he's transcendental to all attachment and detachment. So he's transcendental to the one person's attached. The karma is attached to his particular activities, the results they get, those experiences. right? And the person who is detached is attached to being detached, right? Does that make sense? You know, in other words, the person who's attached is willing to go through all the trouble that goes with grihastha life. The person who's detached is attached to being detached from that. You understand? So both is fine. But the point being made here is that attachment or detachment, that's not the Krishna consciousness. It's that whatever it is you're doing is connected to the Lord. If it's connected, then it will be, then one will be properly situated. Then you can get the complete mercy of the Lord. Therefore, he's transcendental to all attachment and detachment. If Krishna wants, the devotee can do anything which is ordinarily undesirable. Right? It means, you know, Lord Chaitanya wouldn't associate with Maharaj Prataparudra because he's a king. So kings are just, you know, he said pounds, shillings, and pence. They're just interested in, you know, money, power, and this and that. But at the same time, Yudhishthira is emperor of the world. He's not just king of a little part of, you know, India. He's the emperor of the world. So it would be, in that way, normally undesirable, but they can do, you know. Ambarish Maharaj, these other great devotees. And if Krishna does not want, he shall not do that which he would have ordinarily done for his own satisfaction. If Krishna doesn't want, he won't do it. Therefore, to act or not to act is within his control because he acts only under the direction of Krishna, right? Because otherwise it's maybe you'll do, maybe you'll not, the mind gets attached, then you go that way. But here it's for Krishna, so therefore, you know, it would be nice for Krishna, you'll do. If it's not nice for Krishna, you won't do. You know, like Yudhishthira Maharaj, to tell a lie, that wouldn't be considered desirable, right? Like that. But that's what Krishna wanted to be done. Because you're dealing with all these nitiists, you're not dealing with dharmic people. Right? And so therefore, if you use niti against a niti person, what's the problem? Right? Does that make sense? Something like that. This consciousness is the causeless mercy of the Lord, which the devotee can achieve in spite of his being attached to the sensual platform. Right? So here's is the causeless mercy of the Lord, so you want it, Krishna can give it, even if one's attached to the sensual platform. Because once you get it, you won't be attached anymore. Mm-hmm. But you have to want it. Does that make sense?
It seems like if you have those desires, then you'll get more done than if you don't have those desires.
Which desires?
Well, the
central
platform.
No, it means it depends on what you call getting something done. You know what I'm saying? So there may be lots of activities. The point is, it doesn't matter if there's more activities or less activities. It's just full engagement. Right? You know, so someone who's, you know, very scholarly, he may just sit down and read a book all day.
Yes.
You know, and then the next day he'll give a class. So it doesn't look like a lot's happening, but he's fully absorbed. Right? And someone else, and they may be managing this and that, making a million phone calls, running all over, you know, doing that. So they're just, that's their nature, they're engaging it. The point is whatever the conditioning, the senses are engaged in that way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, then footnote 66. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 264, the Lord explains that it is not a fault to accept the objects of the senses, if it is done with controlled senses, with absence of attachment of the objects of the senses. In other words, for the sthita pragya, accepting the renunciation of enjoyment of objects, either by withdrawal of the senses or by engaging the senses, is beneficial. So if there's nothing to use for Krishna service, you withdraw the senses. If there's something to use the senses for in Krishna service, they engage the senses. So for them it doesn't matter which way it is. So they are transcendental to attachment and detachment because they can use either. Whichever is best for Krishna service, that's what they use. Does that make sense? Yeah. For one thus satisfied in Krishna consciousness, the threefold miseries of material existence exist no longer. It doesn't mean the modes of nature aren't functioning, but the miseries that they create don't exist anymore. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon well established. Notice here it says satisfied, doesn't say happy. It says satisfied. Because you can't be happy, you can be satisfied. Happy is a momentary, means when something you want that you don't have, you obtain. That moment is called happiness. And depending on how great it is and how long you've been desiring it, that then you can kind of stretch it out for a little bit. Right? But that's why it goes away. But satisfaction, that's something that can remain.
Maharaj, what purpose would chanting be happy?
Because then on the spiritual platform you can be happy. But on the material platform, happiness is simply removal of pain. Mm-hmm. So therefore, that pain is removed, be satisfied. Right? There's no pain, be satisfied.
Can right? you be unhappy and satisfied?
Unhappy and satisfied.
Like something happened that you don't like. But on the platform of your general life, you're satisfied.
Yes, no, as I mentioned yesterday, it goes back to the training of your mother. You know, because that's the whole thing, is how to always, means the perfection is how to be always insecure, always look at yourself as, you know, useless, and then, but at the same time, be satisfied with that identity, and therefore be upbeat about it. Isn't that what every yeah? So that's the whole point. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it, whatever the situation, you're satisfied because you know it could be something different, you know, like that. You know, it could be better, but it could also be worse. So whatever it is, be happy with that.
Satisfaction is beyond the true
world. Satisfaction is beyond, yeah, you could say. But at the same time, it's within, you could say it's goodness. You know, like that, at least on the material platform. Is goodness that you are, with knowledge, you know that this is what's there. And that's, it's not necessarily going to be better. And even if it is better, it's just a matter of conditioning. You know, someone who has more facility, for them that's ordinary. Someone who has less facility, that's ordinary. You know, so if one gets what the other has, then one is happy, one is not happy. So it's just a matter of. So it's not the facility that makes you happy or not. It's what, how, it's the, that illusion that you project upon it, that this will make me happy or not. This is auspicious or this is inauspicious. Right? So therefore, if we're satisfied, it's just, it doesn't matter what the situation is, then we're satisfied. And that we just, well, how to serve Krishna in the situation.
Hmm? Yes. Then why is there people who are never satisfied?
The illusion that you can be happy within the material world is, I guess, too strong. You know, because why would you be unsatisfied? Because you think, I can be materially happy. You know, but if you think this is as good as it gets, then, you know. Because happiness is just, is an experience that, you know, is just connected with what you are, with the situation you're specifically in. Because how you perceive it, it's happy. Someone else perceives the same situation as not happy. You know what I'm saying? The guy sitting there down on the beach, you know, at the Bahamas there, you know, got his, you know, the chair, he's got his drink with a little umbrella, he's got his sunglasses on, you know, like that. He's got this coconut tree. He's happy. But, you know, sitting next to him, the polar bear is very unhappy. like that. Even he's got his, you know, shades on, it's still, it's just not working for him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's the point, is we are just perceiving what's auspicious and what's inauspicious. So when it's understood that there is no auspicious and inauspicious, it's simply what is useful for serving the Lord and what's not, then it becomes a problem. Right? So one's always dissatisfied. That just means they have so much material desire and it can never be fulfilled. You know.
Because this phenomena actually happens to regular people and devotees as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're only discussing in the context of devotees.
Yeah.
Even most of my examples that seem exceedingly mundane, I'm giving example from devotees' lives. But, you know, but it's being said in that way, so it's amusing. Yeah, no, it bothers everybody. Because the point is material world is not satisfying. You know, like Yayati, he was, you know, young when he was, you know, got cursed by his father-in-law. So then he, you know, arranged, got from his youngest son, his son's youth for 1,000 years, right? So then if you count it as, if it's Satyuga, you live 100,000 years, so 1,000 years, you know, amending, that's not so bad. Even if you only live 10,000 years, still 1,000 years, you know, you can, okay, you know. So he, for 1,000 years, then according to, you know, what's proper, he engaged his senses to the maximum that he could be engaged, right? And being a king, then that gives, you know, a lot of variety, a lot of facility, right? And after 1,000 years, he came and gave the youth back to his son, because he was satisfied now that there's no satisfaction in the material, with immaterial sense gratification. So the satisfaction is, there isn't any. You know, not because we're in anxiety because we think there is. And we're not, and it's not happening to us,
mm-hmm.
or it happened, or, you know, and it's not happening now. In other words, the present we're not experiencing. So when we're satisfied that there is no satisfaction, therefore, then whatever comes along, it doesn't matter. Just like that, the python sadhu, you know, he's there. He said, sometimes I'm fat, sometimes I'm thin, sometimes people come and bring me food, sometimes they don't. You know? So it doesn't really matter. Does that make sense? So these are all things to contemplate, and it's, in other words, they kind of put a, they throw out an idea or an option or a doubt, you know, that the mind just running, you know, on its natural rampage is fine, you know, and that will make us happy. So all these things, then slowly it's, so then, you know, we contemplate now and again, then we're able to connect them, and that slowly becomes more and more. So then is that what sense? You know, it's like, you know, they're slowly waking up. Because it's a reality. That's why Krishna's talking about it. You know, the great saintly persons, they've done it. That's why Arjuna mentions all these great personalities. You know? So it's a fact. It's used. It's done. It's been experienced. Just we're not necessarily, you know, accustomed to it. You know, it's like that. But it's a reality. You know, it's just like, how are the old people, they're satisfied, you know, because, but at the same time, they can't do something new to make themselves happy, you know what I'm saying? They're just satisfied, you know, this is it, you know, this is the way it is, we're old, or the ones that don't like being old, they're not satisfied. The ones that is coming, we're old, hey, you know, they're cool, you know what I'm saying? Because So it's satisfaction is a state of mind. It's not getting something or losing something. But how much can you do to be satisfied? Because when they're younger, it doesn't matter how much you do, you have to do more. No, you know what I'm saying, no, but it's a matter of whatever they did, they're satisfied with. You know, because somebody just, you know, they were at home and grew up in their area and they, you know, raised their family and, you know, they're all grown up now and they all have kids and, you know, they're moving on in life. And someone else, you know, was in the Great War and he did something for his country and all that, and he sits around and satisfied he did something. You know, you think, so it's, you know, it doesn't matter. Whatever they did, it's a matter if you're satisfied with it, you're comfortable. If you're not satisfied with it, it's not what you did. It's not how much you did. It's a matter of they're satisfied with whatever they did. Yes.
Could satisfaction be said to be a relative equilibrium? Like saying, I'm satisfied with the weather. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. So.
Yeah, but satisfied means you're satisfied with what it is. You know, it's not too cold because it could be colder, and it's not too hot because it could be hotter.
Yes.
You know, because some people say, I like this kind of weather. It's not too hot, it's not too cold.
Yes.
But if you're satisfied, it means it could be hotter, it could be colder, but whatever it is, you're comfortable with it.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
There's a difference.
Someone else is bothered by that. I mean, I'm satisfied, but someone else
is bothered. So what can you do about it?
Yeah.
Sing a song.
I mean, I changed, my parents don't like it or something like this, and
but what has that got to do with your self-satisfaction?
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Because we're discussing self-satisfaction. You know, the point is whoever is satisfied is peaceful. Whoever is not satisfied is not peaceful.
Yeah.
So if you may be not satisfied, should you look and think this is just what Krishna's...
Means this is what you have. So you can either be dissatisfied and be miserable, though you're going to stay in the same... It's like, it's not by being dissatisfied, miserable, it changes the situation. So you might as well just, okay, that's the way it is. Yeah.
Doesn't Chanakya Pandit say that one should be never satisfied with one's level of charity, the amount of one's study?
Because that's so that you'll continue. It means it's not that you're not satisfied by the process of it, but you're not satisfied it's been enough. But we're talking here about material desire and stuff like that. So that means, in other words, good work, you know, is always seen as that. One is always, it's just like Krishna conscious, one is never satisfied that I've done enough Krishna conscious, now I can sit back. No, the devotees are always engaged because it's so nice that it's ever increasing. But the material, the satisfaction is theirs because there isn't any anyway.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of so that you will be inspired to further proper performance of activity. Therefore, that element of not satisfied, but it's not that they feel bad about it, because we say dissatisfied. It says you're not satisfied. It doesn't say you're dissatisfied. You know, in other words, it's good, but you can always do more. They don't feel bad about it. But even that, still, unless it's connected to the Lord, it doesn't have any benefit. You have something? It's not your tell. For one that's satisfied in Krishna consciousness, do we finish that? Okay. For one thus satisfied in Krishna consciousness, the threefold miseries of material existence exist no longer. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon well established. Because the mind is not distracting, so then the intelligence of analyzing and knowing what to do is good. One who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? Right? So someone who's satisfied, they can be happy. Because if you're at the neutral state, you can get to the positive. But if you're not up to the neutral, you're below neutral, how you'll have positive. That makes sense. Right? So in the material platform, you're just removing the pain. So you don't actually, there is no pleasure. Like you're really hungry. So eating means you're removing the pain of hunger. So as long as the hunger is still there, you're eating, you say, will be enjoying. But as soon as the hunger is removed, it doesn't taste anymore. You know? Or when you're tired, you lay down, and this, you know, it's like that. But as soon as you're not tired, then laying in bed is annoying. You know? They're saying, and anything, it's just up to the point of its removal. Once it gets to the neutral state, immediately then we look for some other problem. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that would also answer what you were saying, is that if you have constant problems, then you have constant endeavors to make yourself happy by removing those problems. Yeah. One can be peaceful only in Krishna consciousness. Unless one is in Krishna consciousness, there's no possibility of peace. So it is confirmed in the fifth chapter, 529, that when one understands that Krishna is the only enjoyer of all the good results of sacrifice and penance, that he is the proprietor of all universal manifestations, and he is the real friend of all living entities, then only can one have real peace. Therefore, if one is not in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be a final goal for the mind. Right? Because otherwise it's just this, and that's that, then the next thing, and the next thing, and the next, but it's unlimited. Right? You know, the options of what you could do. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. Disturbance is due to want of an ultimate goal. And when one is certain that Krishna is the enjoyer, proprietor, and friend of everyone and everything, then one can, with a steady mind, bring about peace. Therefore, one who is engaged without a relationship with Krishna is certainly always in distress and is without peace, however much he may make a show of peace and spiritual advancement in life. Krishna consciousness is a self-manifested peaceful condition which can be achieved only in relationship with Krishna. Right? Now we see those who are in this condition, you know, and they don't sit around and talking in these very soft tones and, you know, doing funny things like that, you know, that will say, oh, this is a person who's attained peace, right? You know, like that. So it's just that, you know, it's just, you may make a show of peace and spiritual death. No, they're just peaceful. Okay, so that ultimate goal, because the mind means mental speculation means there's always something newer and newer you could go through. It means if this didn't work, well, we can make an adjustment and try this. Or this whole idea is wrong, throw that all out and try something completely new. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you try different things like that, and then, you know, sometime, depending upon the individual, sometime in their youth, they figure out a goal, right? Youth is 16 to 30. They'll figure something out, right? Then they'll work for that. And then, you know, if it works out for them, great. But if it doesn't work out for them, they'll keep trying until they're about 50, 45, 50, 55, somewhere in there. Then they'll think, this didn't work. And so then they'll throw that completely out and try something completely new. Right, so then again, they're back at the stage like the little kids. You know, will I be a fireman, or will I be, you know, this or that, or an astronaut? Or, you know, so like that. So they're trying all these different things again. Right? 267-68. As a strong wet wind sweeps away a boat on the water, Even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. Therefore, O mighty armed one, O mighty armed, one whose senses are restrained from the objects is certainly of steady intelligence. Right? Because sometimes it says, O mighty armed one, as the vocative, but here it was, O mighty armed, one whose senses. Yeah. Right, so here says sweep the song wind sweeps away a boat. So that was the point before, is that wherever it focuses. So the point is someone, you know, the sage, there's less to focus on, but if they do focus on something, you know, because generally they've gotten themselves there by focus. So there's less material to focus on. So if they somehow or another focus on something material, they will have a stronger effect. Right? But it doesn't mean that they're, you know, the same. It just means that the point is you think about contemplate the senses, it'll create a problem. The other person has to contemplate over a long time before anything happens. But this person is, because of his advancement, is so focused that it happens very quick. You know. Only Krishna consciousness can curb sense gratification. One can curb the forces of sense gratification only by means of Krishna consciousness, or engaging all the senses in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As enemies are curbed by superior force, the senses can similarly be curbed, not by any human endeavor, but only by keeping them engaged in the service of the Lord. So right here, it's not a matter we're going to sit down with determination control the senses. It's going to be that the senses are controlled because they're engaged in the Lord's service. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So this idea, no, I'm going to do this myself. No, you just engage it in the Lord's service. That's what makes it work. One who has understood this, that only by Krishna consciousness is one really established in intelligence, and that one should practice this art under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, is called sadhaka, or a suitable candidate for liberation. So then, that suitable candidate, you know, means that they're dynamic, like before we talk about less suitable, right? You know, so here's that, the more suitable. Understood this, that only by Krishna consciousness is there. It's not anything else. It's not by renunciation. It's not by being practical. It's not by this, that. It's just engaging the senses in the Lord's service. That makes it work. Right? And so that is being done under the guidance of the spiritual master. So appreciating that, then that is a suitable candidate. 269. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And what is the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. Devotee is always indifferent to materialistic happiness and distress. Activities of the introspective sage or thoughtful man are night for persons materially absorbed. Materialistic persons remain asleep in such a night due to their ignorance of self-realization. The introspective sage remains alert in the night of the materialistic men. The sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture, whereas the man in materialistic activities, being asleep to self-realization, dreams of varieties of sense pleasure, feeling sometimes happy and sometimes distressed in his sleeping condition. The introspective sage is always indifferent to materialistic happiness and distress. He goes on with his self-realization activities undisturbed by material reactions. 67. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.15, the word yoga nidra is significant. When one is spiritually reconnected through self-realization, one regards his material life as having been like a dream. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.69, what is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled, and the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. The stage of self-realization is called yoga nidra. All material activities appear to be a dream when one is spiritually awakened. Thus, yoga nidra may be explained to be yoga maya. So, for the sage, he's engaged in spiritual life. So that's his day. But that's where the spiritual life is, where the materialist is asleep. He's unaware of it. Right? So he's actually engaged not in spiritual life, but in cultivating through mental speculation the dream state of illusion that I will be happy here. So it means the sage is awake, but the materialist is asleep. Right? It doesn't mean he's lying down in his bed. It means that he's asleep to spiritual understanding. So he's in dreaming in an illusion that he's happy. And in the activities of the materialist is engaged in to make himself happy, that would be his daytime or his activity, the sage is asleep to those. He's not interested in engaging the senses for himself. Right? So we're not necessarily meaning here is that, you know, that we're asleep at night and when we get up, that's when the people are going home from the party. I mean, that there is there also. But, you know, that's what I always thought was interesting. Because you have this, the middle of summer, I guess England is far enough north that it's, you know, ridiculous when the sun goes down. So when we walk from the Brahmachari Ashram to the temple, then, you know, across the street from the temple and that, it's the area, all these nightclubs are there. And so at 4 in the morning, you're walking to going to the temple, and all these other people are coming out of there laughing and that and on their way home. You know, so, you know.
And the converse is when the Brahmacharis are sleeping during the day, they're all hard at work.
Yeah. Like true. Okay. 270. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. Devotee is fully satisfied in transcendental loving service of the Lord. Right? In other words, so long as one has the material body, the bands of the body for sense gratification will continue. I mean, sense gratification means the engagement of the senses. Right? So the senses are connected to the Lord. Then it's not sense gratification, but the senses need to be engaged because that's what the body's made out of. Mm-hmm. So let us say there's some area that we're able to deal with. Let's say on a fast day, you know, we're fasting, it doesn't bother us. So there's so many things to eat around, other people are complaining how they're so hungry, and it doesn't bother us. But it means there's so many different things that may even come up in the mind, but it's a fast, so it goes away. So that same principle can be applied to anything. But the mind speculates that, no, this is an opportunity, you just thought of it, it's a new way of looking at it, so therefore we should try it. But it's a matter of no. Just as in the other, there's so many things you could eat or do, you don't. And you're satisfied. So the same way as any of the senses, then you could apply the same thing. The same principle. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires because of his fullness. The Krishna conscious man is not in need of anything because the Lord fulfills all his material necessities. Therefore, he is like the ocean, always full in himself. Desires may come to him like the waters of the rivers that flow into the ocean, but he is steady in his activities, and he is not even slightly disturbed by desires for sense gratification. Opportunity is there, but you could do so many things. You know, saying somebody sees an open window, they want to jump out of it. You know, I mean, it's like there's something, but you don't. You know, so it's not a matter of just because there's an option, you have to take it. It's a matter of options are there, but the point is options are only as a devotee options if they're connected to Krishna. And if they're not, they're just like, you know, unimportant. You know what I'm saying? Let's say we're walking along, you know, and there's a nice green lawn, right? You know, a cow would want to come over there and eat it, but you don't think, wow, hey, check this out, get down, you know. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that we can say, no, but they're there. That's only because we decide that we're going to agree to that. But if we decide not to, then that's the point. So many of these things can come, and it doesn't matter. So, but the mind will say, no, but here's an opportunity you haven't tried before. It's different, and you'll see like that.
I just wonder, because so many options, we just pass, and we don't pay any attention to the mind, and we bring it back, but then there's something happens, and then...
Yeah, because that's what we're... Or we're conditioned that that's important. What we're saying is, just as you can get control of the senses in one area, you could apply the same principle to the other.
So we should just try it.
Yeah. In other words, it means, yes, we should just try it. But if you're in a situation of whatever it is that you find that you can control, observe it. Right? And note that so many things are there, but you don't care. And it works out. And afterwards, you're happy. Right? And so you could do the same thing in the area that's a problem. Yeah. So it's just because until you've intellectually understood it, then only there'll be some endeavor, right? Because you analyze something, and then the desire can come. You analyze it, you see what the result could be. So then there's an interest in it. So if that interest is there, that can be cultivated, and that turns into our need, right? You know, so it's just a matter of cultivation. Just because it's the same process, we cultivate material desire by contemplating. So if we contemplate what it is we'd like to do in spiritual activity, then it's just by contemplation, then gradually it comes. Right? If we make the endeavor, whatever we've endeavored for, the desire to do that thing again will come up again. You know, so when we've decided that those things that are worthwhile, we continue those, and those that are not, then they'll always keep coming, but you don't just ignore them. You know, and after a while, then they'll go away. You know, they take a while, but they'll go away. Okay. That is the proof of a Krishna conscious man, when it has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification. Although the desires are present, right? Desires are there, but he has no inclination. Because he remains satisfied in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he can remain steady like the ocean and therefore enjoy full peace. Right? So again, here is that the desire could be there, but you don't act on it. Right? That those desires are just by habit. Yes.
I heard my Guru Maharaj say that the opposite, like a shallow puddle, a little bit of sun will dry it up, or if there's rain, it'll spill over. Whereas the ocean, there can be any amount.
Yes, same.
When we finish this, it's only 2 pages left.
There's only 2 pages.
Yeah.
So you're worried. Don't worry, we have 2 more things like this. We have the other part of the 4th section of this, and we have the analysis of the 11 main verses of Gita. Like that, so don't worry, we have plenty to do. I think it was just the first year we had an illusion about how much was there. Because now I figured it out by doing this schedule that's where that would be the natural place to put the study of the deity worship. In the first year. Okay. We're in the second year. In the first year. Because Prabhupada had given it in the original idea of the study. So I couldn't figure where to put it. I thought it would come in the 3rd year or something else. So then it's been moved around. But the volume of material in the 1st year is a little less than these other years, so it could fit there. We'll have to see. We're going through it now with the boys. When we figure it out from there, then we can. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
jai.
Jai Jai Jai.